Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
どこにいるのかな。見えないよ。
あ、
こん
なとこに。
Hi, wayfarers! During your recent conversations on Far Cry 5, it got me thinking about the marketing of the game and how it should be an entirely different game than what the developers ultimately made. This reminded me of the same thing that happened with Halo 5 and, well, the Hunt the Truth marketing endeavor. In the latter's case, they actively were telling a story meant to be set in the Halo universe that ties in with the game through a podcast series, the ads featuring Master Chief and Locke, the other material, and messaging they put out. It seems like marketers and ad people are telling better and more interesting stories and presenting what would be more enticing games than what's actually made. In fact, the stories and ideas presented can be bolder, more interesting, or dramatic, and have greater impact than the games they're meant to sell. Why, if both the ads and the games have to be approved by a publisher, are the ads getting to take greater risks in the stories that they tell? That comes from our reader slash listener, Greg in Helsinki, and that is going to be the topic of Waypoint Radio, episode 149. I'm Danielle Riendo, and of course, joining me here today are Rob Zachney.
Hello, hello.
Patrick Klepek.
Are you sure you don't want the story to be about five people arrested after turning an abandoned Toys R Us into a massive rave?
Oh, no. Wait, what?
Hashtag free the ravers.
That was Austin Walker, but wait, we need to hear about this.
Also, they're making a new Bioshock, according to Jason Schreier.
Yeah, he just drops that in that piece.
Which, that's not news. Like, that game has been developed for, like 6 years.
But it's funny to, like, suddenly have a code name for it.
Yes.
Wait, what's the code name for it? I have missed that. All right, we got a breaking news bulletin.
Parkside is the name of it. There's a Jason Schreier over at Kotaku just ran a long article on the kind of arc of Hangar 13 in the time since Mafia 3 and how morale is really low and how they've been kind of moved from or how projects have changed dramatically there. And part of it is like them being one of his sources basically saying, like, we kept looking across the hallway basically at this other studio that we're next to, and they're like working on whatever the follow-up to was rumored to be the follow-up to Bioshock in the Bioshock series, and just kind of being like, well, why can't we be working on the cool thing instead of the thing we're working on? So then
Hangar 13 went to a Toys R Us, and then they turned it into a rave.
You're right. They're like, you know what's going to get our spirits up? Fucking a rave in Toys R Us, a rave in the Barbie aisle.
That sounds awesome. And I'm not really into rave, but like, I'm willing to make an exception to carve it out. I'll bring my kid.
Yeah. She can play with whatever toys, and you can play with the great music. And
whatever, man. She eats so much shit off the ground before I catch it that she might as well have eaten drugs at this point. It's fine.
Good. Well, sometimes the stories of what game developers do are better than the stories of games themselves. So we brought it right back around.
Totally. I mean, Mafia 3 is kind of interestingly part of this phenomena, right? Like Mafia 3, all the ads, all the commercials, all of the E3 booths that were made to look like New Orleans, really focus on the heavy narrative elements of that game that are all great, right? Like it is a lie by omission, but in some sense, like the ads did not include all of the times that you had to go through and destroy stuff so that you could then eventually maybe unlock the actual mission or like the pre-mission, then you could do the pre-mission and then you could get to the real mission. I happen to like all that stuff, and so it didn't bum me out, but I know a lot of people felt like what they were signing up for was something a little more cinematic and a little more focused, and instead they got this thing that kind of had a lot of grinding in it and a lot of like side activities that people didn't really want to do, and
a lot of chores. Lincoln had to do a lot of chores
before you kill the mob lord. You gotta do your chores.
That's true. Gonna eat your vegetables.
That's like a classic, very broad example, and not as kind of high concept maybe as the ones that I'm sorry. Who's the what was the name of the person who wrote the?
Greg. It's Greg in Helsinki. Yeah.
As Helsinki Greg's ones that involve kind of bigger marketing plays, but you
hey,
know
we
I think
tied it in though. Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of play is kind of the standard. Is like, hey, we're going to show you the best parts of this game and leave out the bits where you're going to be like, I can't believe I have to do this for the next 30 minutes.
True. I guess it all started here. Well, not it all started here, obviously. But Greg was inspired by the Far Cry 5 stuff, which is interesting.
Sure.
We've talked about that quite a bit, about how it was you know, sort of positing this really interesting sort of post-Trump worldview and having, you know, some interesting politics and actually, you know, saying something, so on and so forth. The thing that kind of struck me the most out of all of that was that they, you know, especially Austin, when you talk to the cult expert who had all these interesting things to say about cults and deprogramming and how, you know, sort of false and over-dramatized everything was in the popular media. And then they did exactly the, you know, boring trite thing in the game itself, which is like, why did you hire them? Like,
right.
Why bother?
Think about how much worse it would have been if they didn't, you know, they didn't have those experts. You know, I think the thing that's interesting with Far Cry 5,
Far Cry 2,
is that the initial run of kind of marketing outreach, whether that was, I mean, I think there's it's kind of a fine line to draw between marketing and PR, an important one, because like when PR puts together a presentation for us, they see it as a sort of like indirect marketing, obviously, right? The hope is that we go back and write previews and talk on podcasts about the game. But there's also marketing where like a marketing team can craft an entire messaging campaign, sometimes using kind of creatives, expert ad people from outside of the studio itself, either provided by the publisher or through an outside agency to craft a message that gets at some core ideas around something that has to do with the game, and kind of hits some degree of like it communicates something about the themes of the game or the feel or the vibe or something, and those two things are importantly distinct in terms of how they operate. Because they're hitting different audiences. Like the reason that I really want to hold Ubisoft PR to task for the opening pitches is because like, yo, you're talking to people who are going to touch this game, who are going to play this game, and who understand that stuff directly. Marketing campaigns are often for like whoever turns on the NBA Finals, right? And like, oh, that's not, yeah, I haven't played Call of Duty in 5 years. This one seems dope. Like, all right, I'm in. Versus someone who's like, oh, we're going to represent to you the actual experience of playing the game. And so when those initial pitches for Far Cry 5 hit, they were, you know, I'll stand by everything I fucking wrote about that game. You know, we signed NDAs because there was shit that they were worried that we would report on because it was too serious. It would get their sources in trouble, you know, and stuff like that, right? That stuff has been reported by Ars Technica, by Polygon, that like there's stuff that today I am still not able to talk about regarding that initial Far Cry 5 pitch and how hard they pushed that it was about militias, which is very frustrating, but so it goes. And I think that's an interesting thing, because what ended up happening is if you actually track the Far Cry 5 arc, eventually their marketing material pivoted really hard away from that. After a really kind of suspenseful, intense opening kind of teaser trailer and kind of reveal trailer, it eventually became like Far Cry 5, you're blowing up shit with your buddies. And that was a much more honest take on what that game was. And I think if they had shown that they'd gone out that route to begin with, you would have seen a lot of different coverage coming out of that initial event. So, you know, so it goes.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I know, Rob, you had mentioned, we were kind of chatting about this, that Dead Island trailer, famous example of this. Do you want to set that up a tiny bit?
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, the trailer sucked too.
I love that
trailer. Manipulative garbage. Like,
that's
that was
exactly
the most,
why it's good.
Oh my god! But I mean, it was, what was amazing is that, like, so if you remember Dead Island, let's talk about what Dead Island was, right? Dead Island.
Yes.
Yeah. Dead Island was basically a like zombie survival game set in a tropical paradise. I think it was from the team that went on to do Dying Light, but it was in much more of this like Far Cry 3 raucous, like it's spring break and oh shit, there's zombies, and like the tourists are getting eaten by zombies. And the game itself is very like, you know, trying to be lighthearted and funny about the entire thing. Funny in this case means leaning a lot on racial stereotypes, but like that was the direction it was going. It's like we're being irreverent with zombie movie tropes. But the trailer for this thing was this like you know, like quote like haunting, right? A trailer about this you see this little girl like basically like having like lying dead in the street, and then slowly over this like sad like piano solo, the entire trailer plays backwards, and you see like her go from being a zombie to like you know, a little girl on vacation with her family as they're trying to flee the zombies, and all the way back to the start of their vacation. And it's like, oh, this is sad. This is like, there's a lot of pathos into this thing. Embarrassingly, a lot of people like bit down hard on this. Like a lot of people are like, oh, this is just, what a masterpiece of a trailer. what a bold decision to murder
like
a child.
Cole plays the scientist. And
I think you might be overstating people's reactions. They were just like, is this an effective trailer? And I hope this game actually finds this emotional, like, bit. Like, at the end of it, like, it's a master. Like, oh, come on. Like, you're being a little bit
disingenuous. No, dude. I swear to God. Let's...
There is a Wikipedia entry for this announcement trailer. By itself, which is very few things get that much of a response, you know, when it comes to just straight up marketing material. I'll read from the Wikipedia, which, you know, obviously Wikipedia, most trusted source in America, says, upon its release on February 16, 2011, the trailer sparked public interest, and the community reaction led Techland to adjust the content of the actual game, which... I didn't know that that was true.
I didn't know that either.
I also, if that is the case, like the mission failed.
yeah, exactly.
And
exactly.
I like that game a lot. That game has a tremendously good combat system that kept me like going in a game that is otherwise like fairly average. Good combat.
Right. But this is a good example of the thing I was talking about before, which is that trailers like that are not always – they don't emerge from the dev team, right? And they don't necessarily reflect what the game is because there is just a degree of separation there, right? So like in this case, that specific trailer was made by Axis Animation in Glasgow. Glasgow. And again, here's a quote. According to Stuart Aitken, Axis's managing director and technical director, and the director of the trailer, Deep Silver gave the team a lot of creative freedom and flexibility in creating the trailer, allowing them to create their own characters instead of using the in-game protagonists. Deep Silver had given them a script and general idea for them to follow, and the team expanded upon it. In order to make the trailer feel non-linear and focused, the team decided to narrow the focuses the trailer's location to only a single hotel room. Deep Silver wanted the trailer to have some exterior environment. As a result, the team added a segment, which is a daughter falling through the hotel window.
Oh,
in the process,
God.
Audiences can glimpse the island setting. And it's just like, I love the idea of these things as being constant kind of negotiations back and forth. It's like, this is a very good trailer. People can't see how pretty the island is. Could you like figure out we'll throw her out the window. Don't even worry about it. We got you.
I just love what they clearly got from the pitch was like, okay, island, vacation. You know what would be really sad? If you died on vacation. Okay, great, go. Like,
you know, it would be sad to die on vacation for what it's worth.
No, I know. It's just like, that's where they got like, oh, hey, go on vacation and kill zombies. It's like,
right.
Yeah, but what if, man? What if? I love that whole thing. I love the whole kind of example. Well, and also, Dead Island. Sorry, I'll be super quick on this one. Dead Island, famously, I think it was Dead Island 2. They got into hot water, whatever the team was that did the sort of collectible figurine that was half of a woman's torso. A
figurine
eaten
is
by
too
a shark
small.
Or whatever.
It was like a statuette.
Yeah, it's a statue. God. It's
like
a major award.
Torso zombie, like a woman's like torso with boobs in a bikini.
Oh right, that and that's the other thing.
Torn.
The torso was brutally mangled.
Yes,
but the boobs were perfect.
The boobs
like,
were
it was. Yeah. It was like, it was just gross on many levels.
It was a lot.
Yeah. Well, and so I like Greg's question wasn't just like, oh, hey, what are some times this happened, right? It was like, why do marketing attempts like this get to be more interesting sometimes than the games themselves when it comes to things like tone and theme and stuff? I'm curious what you all think about this case. Like, why does Dead Island look like Dead Island in terms of its tone, and the Dead Island trailer look like this other kind of more, you know, you can imagine a real life version of this being a trailer for a horror movie that crosses over a little bit into like Prestige, you know what I mean? Like maybe 28 Days Later, but like a Let Me In or like a something like that, right?
Ghost Story.
So why do you think that's the case, that like the marketing team goes this route while the game is going this other route?
Well, it's because they don't talk to each other. Like, this is like very specifically how. No, I mean, that's not a joke. Like the vast majority of development teams have absolutely no control, no influence over the marketing, and it's because their aims are different, right? Like, if you take game development in the purest form, and I think, you know, the vast majority of developers like approach the games they make in this way, is like they want to make a good game, right? Like, they want the game to sell, they want it to be appealing, but like they are, you know, trying to achieve whatever goal it is and to make the game that they set out to do. The marketing team is judged on vastly different metrics, which is how that game is sold. And so
getting attention. Yeah.
You know, the Dead Island team did their job. Like, they were hugely successful, and they may have sold a misleading game, but that's not, if that got people interested, if the video blew up, if it made its own Wikipedia entry, if that led to any more sales, the team did their job. Now, granted, you know, it's better when that stuff works in sync, because it feels like it's not misleading. Like, famously, go back to the 90s, you know, look at Final Fantasy VII's trailer, like a completely computer generated pitch on what the story of this game is, which is not untrue in the sense that that game has lots of cutscenes that look similar to the trailer that you would watch if it was on TV, but that is not how the game looks. The game is like very flat shaded polygons, and so, you know, when I've talked to developers that work on big AAA games, you know, games that have come out, you know, are coming out right now, like, there's just not a lot of communication between the two. Like, maybe they get a chance to, like, look over that stuff, and if something is particularly egregious, they could have input, but the idea that they have influence is, by and large, just not the case. And so,
I think the question is speaking to, like, why is the thing they do have control over so often so fucking boring compared to the thing that was marketed? Like, I mean,
the scope is smaller. You're making a game over 5 years in which it's so easy for things to get fucked up and wrong and go in different directions and compromises and things that don't work out. Whereas, like, hey, make like a sad CG trailer that's 45 seconds long. Like, that's a pretty manageable project. It's a lot harder for that thing to go out of control or go wrong, just because the amount that goes into it, the time it takes to produce it, is so much more compressed. It's just it's a matter of scope.
Is there also a kind of, maybe not cynical, but a critical response here, which is like, it turns out that when you're putting a commercial on TV or on an award show or wherever it is to appeal to the widest variety of players and potential consumers, you are building something for an audience that will respond to something like this. But like, as a game, does the game that strikes this tone actually sell the numbers that Dead Island needed to sell to recoup? Do you know what I mean? Morose, and I mean, I don't know. Maybe maybe The Last of Us is proof that you can do that, right? Like, The Last of Us sold pretty well. So maybe, but like, there's part of me is skeptical that the game that followed, that the game that felt like Dead Island or that played like Dead Island, but that was just this kind of like dreary and tragic thing, would have actually, or maybe it's not even that would it have, but it feels like that studio was not interested in making that game or didn't think that game would have done well. They did want to do their jokes about like super drunk Russian tourists constantly, you know? I don't know. I don't know.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I wonder if it's the perception that, okay, to do a prestige game, you need a prestige budget, that sort of thing. Like, Last of Us has massive budget and had the backing of Sony. Whereas something like Dead Island, I have no idea what the actual budget is, but I can't imagine that it's as much as The Last
of
Us.
Right, it comes from Techland, who at the time, everyone was fond of saying, well, is it going to be good Techland or bad Techland? Right. Which Techland are we getting? I enjoyed my time with that. I didn't finish that game, but I enjoyed it. I will briefly speak to Rob's claim that this was a well-received trailer.
Hold on. No. Don't misrepresent what I said. At no point was saying that it wasn't well received or well liked or like made a point. My idea was that like saying that it was like it's a masterpiece and like this is like the pinnacle of gaming. And also, it does not undercut that point if you can find some bullshit headline that does make that argument.
It's not headlines; it's quotes. First of all, more than a million people viewed it within the first week, where Deep Silver thought it would be 100,000. Here are some quotes. Keith Stort from The Guardian at the time said that it's successful. Delivered an effective and emotive experience. That's pretty
mild.
Yeah, it did. Mike Fahey from Kotaku said it was heartbreaking and thought that it would be amazing if Techland was able to incorporate these emotional elements in the actual game. Also good. Jason Schreier said that the trailer had successfully made a saturated genre feel fresh again. I think that's probably pushing it a little bit. I think that the fact that we got like multiple articles about how good this trailer was does speak to at the time. It totally felt like everyone was just fucking devouring
this
thing.
2012?
2011.
Okay.
Yeah.
It also speaks to the fact that like games, that's a lot of those
games
quotes
press.
Are like, no, less that is, I mean, yes, like prone to hyperbole. Like I'm as guilty of that as anyone. But especially when you got right posts every day, you find stuff to write about.
That's what I was gesturing towards. Yeah.
But I think underlying that is also, and this still remains true, but definitely go back, to 2011, like hoping that a game, like people desperate for a game to speak to something like that.
Right.
You just end up grasping on anything and being like, yes, this,
they're
and
doing
you kind
it.
Of, right. You're making the game that you can make horror that's also affecting, doing anything that is emotional or heartfelt,
that's how Heavy Rain even happened. I feel like I remember when Heavy Rain came out, people talking about like, oh my god, no game has ever done this before. This emotional.
I was guilty of it.
I was too. I mean, like I thought some of it obviously was pretty goofy, but some of it I was like, wow, man. And now look at that fucking game.
But that game, like, I don't think Heavy Rain actually does kind of at least try to do what it says on the box, right? Like, there are long sequences of, like, you trying to make a shitty single dad dinner for your son who hates
that
you.
That's true.
And, like, there's a long sequence where it's like, well, I guess I'll just go stand in the backyard in the heavy rain and shoot some hoops before my son is abducted tomorrow. That's kind of what this game is trying to do. But I think the dynamic of trying to put something out there that suggests like, here's what we want to evoke. Here's what this game is going to be attempting to do. That really hasn't changed, right? Like this Dead Island thing is fundamentally, I think, not that different from what happened with Far Cry 5 in some ways, right? Where it's like Far Cry 5 opens with this, like, we're going to get into some real shit here. Militias, cults, they are not a joking matter. Like, you can't ever tell people about this because, like, real lives are at stake, damn it. And then you get the game and it's like, why don't you send your good dog to go fuck up that, like, you know, that cultist who's, you know, breathed the, you know, chaos
bliss
fumes or whatever. I don't
bliss,
know.
Thank
yeah.
you, Rob.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
So I just
been shot by bliss bullets.
Yeah. So, like, I feel like that dynamic is just really bulletproof in a lot of ways, because it is easy. I mean, movies aren't really that different. It is easy to like put out the equivalent of a mood board and get people to read something into it than it is to sustain it.
Movies are different because by and large, not everything, but by and large, movie trailers are at least comprised of movie footage. And that doesn't mean you can't fuck with that. Like, lots of people went to see Marley and Me thinking it was a different movie than what it was. But, like, you and there are great recuts, you know, obviously, if you've seen, like, the Shining recut trailer to make it look like a
romantic comedy one.
Or a father-son, you know, bonding, you know, thing. Whatever it is. Like, that's a pretty common thing. You can totally edit your way into kind of a mismatched tone thing. But games often launch with or are revealed with teaser trailers, with CG trailers. And sometimes you can see that someone does like a really decent job. I really loved all of the Star Wars, the Old Republic, trailers, which none of which used in-game footage because that game looked like
it's an MMO.
It's an MMO. Like, it didn't look great. And instead they did those really cinematic trailers that I think were made by the CG house called Blur. But when you go back and look at them after having played that game for 100 hours or whatever I fucking put into it, you actually see like, oh, that's that ability being used. I remember that ability. I remember that, you know, that fight. Like, I remember how these character classes work together. And they actually do manage to communicate some of that stuff. And also, they make it look like a high-end, like, CG Star Wars movie. So, like, they're absolutely selling you something you don't get in that game. But there can be ways to kind of play in that space without going all the way towards Far Cry 5, right?
Yeah,
but I think more importantly, it's just like, oh, yeah, you can show the game. When you show the game versus showing, like, pre-rendered what's the phrase that I'm looking for?
CGI.
Target renders. Yes. Like, specifically, like, here's what we want this game to be.
Oh, sure, yeah.
That stuff is always the worst, because, like, that game is not... You've no idea if you're going to stick the landing on this at that point.
I was thinking one of the ones that... I've always liked the Microsoft's approach to Halo's marketing, actually. Mm-hmm. Those trailers they've done for a lot of the Halo games, where it's, like, the... not claymation, but, like, you know, they, like, set up, like, a battlefield. They, like, slowly pan
like diorama
over.
Style.
The diorama, yeah. And, like, it, I've always thought that, like, it's not misleading. It's not showing the game, but it definitely, I have found, like conveys, like, a sense of, like, the chaos and, like, the different, like, ways, like, battles play out in those games. Like, and I always found them to be, like, trying to convey, I mean, because that game does have a story it's trying to tell that is, like, you know, trying to be emotional to some degree, like, whatever you think of the effectiveness of it. But I've always thought they look really cool, and also they don't seem deceptive to the game that they're trying to sell.
I'm glad you brought up Halo.
Okay.
Like, because I actually think they are really effective, and I don't think they're trying to, like, give you this bait and switch of, like, this is what Halo is going to be like now. Usually there's a pretty clear distinction between, like, the game we're making and then these are our trailers, but a lot of these trailers, and the ones that really stand out in my mind were the ones that were kind of going for that, like, oral history of the war against the Covenant vibe, where it's like, where is Master Chief? Whatever happened to that guy? Like, it's sort of like, you know, Superman has vanished from the Earth, and, you know, we're left with this legacy that we have to puzzle out. And it's these interviews with veterans, and it's very, like, based on Band of Brothers, people talking about their memories of fighting the Covenant. And what they're sort of putting down there is this idea that, like, no, this is serious shit. Like, this isn't, like, at least for the purposes of these trailers, this wasn't the great Muppet War of, you know, the far future. This was, like, a generation-defining struggle to stave off this alien menace. And then the games never really do anything with that at all. Like, once the game starts, it's straight back to, you know, Master Chief is the king badass, and maybe there's other characters introduced that are, like, also doing stuff in this universe now, but in terms of tone, I don't think it ever really gets anywhere near this idea that there's real weight or stakes to the story in this universe.
I think that series has stakes, because the stakes are always, like, the world, the universe is going to blow up, the Halo ring is going to destroy us, whatever. But it doesn't have, like, personal connections to anybody besides Master Chief, Cortana, and then, like, whoever the Admiral of Choice is that is a Major Keyes or whoever is the person in that given entry. I think it's, like, a difference in focus more than, like, that's not a goofy game. Do you know what I mean? Like, those games do take their fiction seriously about the prophets and the truth and the arbiter and all that stuff. But it's a different sort of serious. It's serious in the sci-fi original takes itself seriously, in which it's like the plot is important. The plot events are things you're supposed to care deeply about, not about characterization, not about everyday soldiers, with exception, right? Like, I think you look at...
ODST.
ODST, which is like, okay, at least these are just like, here are these five people. And even then, I don't
think... It's a cast of Firefly, though.
It is. Yeah, that's it what I'm is. Saying. Even that, I don't think it goes all the way to where we would like it to go, or where the marketing kind of gestures at. But also that marketing is about, that marketing isn't even about those games. That marketing is about Halo as like a lifestyle. It's about like, strap in, you love Halo, you can play the Halo video game, you can watch these cool ads, watch our short film, read our books, read the comics, put a Covenant laser sword on your wall, like live the life of Halo. And in the same way that like having the beam sword or whatever that thing is called, why don't I remember the name of the laser sword in Halo? Anyway, in the same way as like buying that doesn't represent Halo, those ads are almost for like reactivating a base that just generally has a lot of enthusiasm more than like reaching out. There are obviously exceptions to this. Like I think the finish the fight stuff around Halo 3, some of that was definitely broadened out in scope. Just be like, look at this cool Master Chief as he like has on a cloak and then he throws down a bubble shield. You ain't seen shit like this before. But a lot of that like hyper serious stuff around the edges is just almost meant to be consumed on its own, or maybe it's not meant to be, but that's the way I've seen it used. Is like, I see Halo fans I know reference that stuff the way you might reference a B-side on one of your favorite albums. Like, it's not necessarily the core experience, but it is an experience in and of itself for those who are that committed.
Yeah.
It's weird.
All the Halo stuff is... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's it. I said it's weird.
It is weird. Well, speaking of weird, the whole Halo discussion has sort of reminded me of being bummed that the tone or the mechanics didn't kind of go all the way. This isn't it was completely false to what ended up being in the game, but more like, man, wouldn't it have been great if, you know, X happened? And that was those early Bioshock Infinite trailers that showed, there was one that showed Elizabeth, the sort of main character who can tear through the universe, tearing into an alternate history like 1983.
Mm-hmm.
There was a whole thing about like, oh, one of the core mechanics of this game is going to be tearing through reality, creating alternate timelines, this whole thing that like, yes, okay, I guess that was kind of in the game, sure. But
not,
like, it
not
like,
how they pitched it though. You're right.
Exactly.
Those previous trailers were like blatant misrepresentations of the game that shipped, which, you know, it's one thing if it ships and we're like, hey, they go, hey, by the way, like, this game changed a lot in mm-hmm. order to get it out. Like, but that, like, one, no one's ever going to do that. Two, it basically, like, those trailers are lies. That game is not the game that came out. Like, that, like,
right.
Whole cloth mechanics are not in that, like, I think it's like 2012, like, whatever that famous
the debut trailer.
Yeah.
That got
yeah.
like all the awards. And I saw that quote unquote demo and it looked fucking incredible. Like I came out of being like, all right, like they're going to do this. Like it's going to be, this is going to be a thing and I'm super stoked for it. And like that is not the, even like take apart the story stuff, right? Like if the game they mechanically shipped has nothing to do with that. I wrote a piece for Kotaku a couple of years back about how E3 demos are made, and I spoke with Sean Elliott, who was one of the senior designers on that, specifically about that demo and all the things that like went wrong the moment they went home and said, hey, let's go make that game. Like one of the key things that happened at Bioshock Infinite, which you could probably write a whole book about the development of Bioshock Infinite,
yes,
and maybe someone
you could.
Someone will. one of the key things he told me was like they built the whole game on PC. And the reason that game was going to sell anything was, or at least the numbers that were going to justify its budget, was that it had to come out on consoles. And they were like, oh, we'll just build the game on PC to the spec that we want, with the mechanics that we want to do, and then like hand it to some porters. And like they did that, and they found out, holy shit, this game cannot ship on these machines. And then outside of all sorts of other reasons that game had to change, that was one of the early big ones, was like, actually, the game we have built on PC, and this is common. I want to make it clear: building a game on PC and then it's brought down to consoles, like that is extremely common in game development. But what happened with them was like they bit off way more than they could chew, and then that game could not run on consoles at like a at a frame rate that was ever going to be acceptable.
Yeah.
So go watch the video that Austin wrote about a couple of weeks back about Far Cry 2 and Far Cry 5 by a YouTube creator called Kroby Cat. He did a excellent piece, a video feature about Bioshock Infinite, in which he, through no commentary at all, will show you why those trailers were blatant lies for what the game that ultimately.
Kroby Cat stuff.
Oh, good.
I was very briefly. Kroby Cat stuff is interesting, explicitly because a lot of what they do is that sort of here is what the marketing is, and then here's mm-hmm. what you get at the end. Yeah. And I think probably, I wrote that piece, and then I got a lot of responses that were like, oh, this person's like super toxic. And I was like, oh shit. Like, I did a Google search and didn't find shit about anything. And a lot of the argument was like, a lot of their videos, like this one's good, but the Far Cry one was good is what people were saying. But like a lot of those videos take things out of context or kind of find sound clips to really emphasize overemphasize some of the differences between early promises and eventual release or whatever.
I don't think his general thesis is wrong.
Right.
Like, that might be true. And like, yeah, he's trying to make a, you know, he's doing a thing on YouTube, shock. Like it's prone to hyperbole to stand out. But the general thesis of what he's working on is like underexplored and under discussed. And so like, I'm willing to generally like let that go to a certain degree because he actually often does, like his Switch video he did is bad. The Switch did not have like a super bad launch with like every machine being broken, and that video has like 35 million views.
Complete bullshit, right?
Yeah,
right.
It's total bullshit. Like he was wrong on that. He exploited something, a hoop, and he jumped through it. But like a lot of his work, like even if you disagree with some of the decisions he makes and the content, like tends to expose sort of what we're talking about here, generally speaking.
Right, yeah. And the BioShock one, from what I recall, is like, this is the distinction between the game that shipped and that early promise, massive, massive.
Yeah, I just wanted to note that a lot of that early teaser, which, that was my first E3, so I was very easy to please. No, it wasn't my first E3. It was like my second E3. It was early on in my actually sort of going to press events career. In that portion, and a lot of that was about the Skyhook stuff. A lot of the sort of sky combat, using the sort of roller coaster rails to do a whole... It was like an immersive sim on a roller coaster, which you can only imagine how excited even more easily impressed Danielle was at that point.
Like, that specific trailer showed a lot of stuff as being systemic that would eventually become scripted, right?
Yeah.
And also, like, way more vertical. Like, that opening, that trailer from, I think it's E3 2011, has so much verticality, and it presents the feeling that you will be going through these big open areas that are not just, like... not just wide, which is what most of them ended up being, but tall in a meaningful way, and that there's lots of and also dense, that like, oh, this is like a big living city and I'm going to explore it using these skyhooks. And in fact, it ended up being a lot more about arenas than about like open world areas. And yeah, also there's like, I have it running on my screen right now, and there's so many mechanics that, again, are just things that like Elizabeth does to change the effect of, to like, that you could, in the middle of a fight as a way to like tilt the battle. And like, yeah, that happens when they said it would. It's not like a thing that's like, she just does it as an AI character whenever she thinks it's a good call. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So she found ammo somewhere. She didn't open a tear in the universe. Oh my God. You have a new timeline and there's a new,
Well, Danielle, where do you think she found that? Where do you think she found that ammo?
That's what I'm saying, though. They're like saying, "Oh, it's so cool because she went to another world for it." Those are 1983. Can't we just go to the other world? Oh, God damn it!
1983 bullets, right there.
I know. They're way more powerful. I mean, yeah. They would be, right? But
I guess Revenge of the Jedi was in theaters instead of Return of the Jedi. So
it was in alt history, 1983. Oh my God! I'm sorry. I just still want that game. One day.
That's fair. That's fair.
Some modder. We'll have amazing, Unity 27. It'll be easy to make this. And I'm just kidding. Major example I definitely wanted to touch on was not just when marketing is sort of telling, I guess, suppose an exciting story, but also that it like sucks a little bit and actually gets people in hot water. And the first thing I thought of for that was the Augs Lives Matter marketing campaign for Deus Ex. It wasn't Human Revolution. It was Mankind Divided, I think. It was the one that came out in 2015.
We were here, so it had to be
2016, actually.
Yeah, it was 2016. That game came out while Patrick and I were at Vice. So, yeah, time is wild. But that ad would have been 2014 or 2015 for sure. Yeah. That debut.
Okay. Yeah, that's an example where, first of all, the story it was telling was a potentially interesting story. It just was done in such a horrible, insensitive way. Using the language of Black Lives Matter is, fuck you, first of all, I suppose. But also, that game's politics are actually really meek and really, a little bit of a Far Cry 5 situation where, the thing that was being presented was, wow, what a radical concept, right? We're talking about an actual a divide in the species, and there's genuine, like, you know, commentary here about class and class warfare, but ended up being kind of, you know, a little bit meek, a little bit weak in its arguments. It didn't really say much. So that's, I feel like that's an example of this, of what our reader Greg in Helsinki is talking about here with Far Cry 5. But also, like, this was actively bad in other ways. Like, this was actively sort of, like, co-opting language. And then they doubled down. I remember there's a whole thing where they doubled down on the language that was like, oh, no, we didn't get this from Black Lives Matter. They just, that just happened independently, and it was like,
yeah, that was bad. Well, yeah. The thing that I actually kind of felt a uniquely different way, which was that, like, I was really mad at that I'm not mad, but I was, like, really, like, unimpressed by that that marketing, and just thought, like you said, like, misappropriation of something that is incredibly serious in a work that already has a lot to do, like a lot of work to do, a very difficult job. And then I played that game, and like I didn't finish Mankind Divided. I didn't love it, but it had some stuff going on, and I think that there were a couple of early game things that actually on their own were being very subtle and very nuanced about you know, kind of relationships between different identities, specifically because of where that game took place. And like, it was kind of you play in Prague, and there's a lot of racial and national politics at play that layer on top of the politics around in that game, kind of augmentation. And there was some interesting stuff happening there, along class lines too. And I just kept feeling like, man, I bet that there are writers on that game who saw that material and were just like, yo, fuck this. And I can't believe that they are doubling down in this way that makes it less likely for someone to engage critically with the work we're doing. That stuff's always a bummer because, like, I know that people who make games are working really hard on them. And, you know, it doesn't always mean that what they make is great, but I can very easily imagine being in a situation where it's like, I busted my ass to do this the right way, and then some marketing team walked in and decided to do it this other shittier way, you know?
Yeah. It's almost like an opposite situation in this case. That,
right.
Maybe not all the way opposite, but like somewhat. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. All right. If we don't have any more examples, do you folks have any more examples? I can read a question bucket otherwise, or?
I mean, I'm shocked none of us have talked about No Man's Sky.
Oh, God.
And I didn't want to be the one to bring up No Man's Sky because I like No Man's Sky because I that was a weird situation for me.
You liked it in spite of it, right? Like you would both acknowledge that what they pitched was far different from what they shipped, and yet you liked what they shipped anyway.
My experience, if I'm being deeply honest with what my experience was watching those trailers and stuff, is not a very sympathetic one. And so I'm going to phrase things very carefully, which is to say, I'll talk about my experience. I watched that initial trailer, and then I went to their website and I read the pitch, and I pretty much got what I thought I would get from that game. I didn't expect as much crafting, but I absolutely thought it was going to be – I mean, I actually did – I did expect some crafting. The way that game was initially pitched included, like, a lots about losing resources. There's lots of, like, vague references to a sort of structure of, like, trying to get to the center of – not that vague. Trying to get to the center of the galaxy and losing things if you failed and, like, kind of losing resources if you failed. The early pitch seemed to be a walking simulator, or like maybe not a simulate walking simulator, but like not a game that was heavily about combat or factions. And I knew that I saw that trailer and was like, man, this is going to be a cool way for me to like chill out and relax. And I never had my hopes raised to something that was not the thing it ended up being. And so if you go back and listen to me on the Giant Bomb or the Giant Bombcast or the Giant Beastcast at the time, you can hear me explain what I think that game is going to be. And it ended up being kind of in line with, or if you go watch old Stream Friend streams, it ended up being really in line with what I thought it would be. And so I didn't have the experience of kind of feeling like, I was also very skeptical of lots of their pitch in some way. So maybe I also had that benefit, which is that like I was doing my master or my PhD research on procedural gener- like one of the chapters is on procedural generation and marketing and like trying to sell the idea of the forever game. And so I kind of was already skeptical of it. And I kind of felt because of that, felt like I knew what it would be. And then it was kind of the thing that I thought it would be. And so when I got that thing, I liked it a lot. But I did see again and again, people saying like, I'm only going to play this game for the rest of my life. Yeah. This game is going to have so many great, like, cool faction systems. It's going to have multiplayer. And, like, they did a bad job of not saying straight out that that game was not going to be multiplayer. Like, bad job, Sean Murray, on not just saying, no, it's not going to have multiplayer the way you're thinking of it at all. Like, should have said that right away. But at the same time, there for me, there was a degree of looking at that and lots of people filling in the gaps with what they really hoped they would be there. And
sort of, I don't know. I think that's being too, way too generous.
I don't know. Like it's just, it's just not my experience. Like I can't lie and I thought that game was going to be something it wasn't. Like I just didn't have.
I'm not saying you, I'm just saying like, I'm in the other camp. They're like, saw those trailers. Like the trailers, they allowed people to fill in the gaps. They allowed.
Yeah, totally.
They allowed people to dream up a game and at no point tempered expectations and at no point said, actually, this is what the game is. And so, yes, it is on all sorts of people who allowed that marketing, including myself, to work on them. But they rode that wave disingenuously. We're going to let people dream because we're like, and that, and no point saying like, actually, your dream is wrong. Here's actually the game we're building, and the game you think is coming. Like maybe we can do that in 5 years because we're going to keep working on this game. And that's what they've since done. They've managed to tamper that down by like the game comes out. People think actually this was a misleading marketing campaign for the last 3 years, and is not the game that actually they ended up shipping. And it seems like they're going to build towards that. And I wouldn't be surprised if No Man's Sky of like 2022 is like a more in line with like people's dream of what that game was, but like absolutely they rode like a wave of disingenuous dreams about that game when at some point they should have come in and said, hey, that's hard. Like, what are you gonna do? Like, actually, like the game that you're excited about doesn't exist. But
I don't even know what that game is. Like, this is the thing that was so hard for me watching people get excited about that thing. Was like, what's the? So like, I've looked at what people have come out and said.
Well, I expected planets that weren't fucking boring. Like, I expected like,
but this was too nebulous, though.
Because that was literally the whole pitch of that game.
But what did they show you at any point that wasn't? That was interesting. Do you know what I mean? Like, they showed you animals walking around, and they showed you, like, pretty planets. Like,
Because you expect like, anything else. Like, this is 5% of what's actually there.
That's the thing that's difficult, is, like, how do they show you that there isn't something else there?
Right,
well,
so...
They didn't say it.
So I want to be clear that they didn't... So, yeah, so I think holding Murray account to account when it comes to interviews is, like, 100% on point. But when I see people go at that trailer, and it's like, there wasn't a crashed freighter in the launched game, like... Motherfucker, if there was a crash, those crash traders are in there now. They didn't make that game good if what you were looking for.
But that's
was
indicative
like
of like the larger thing, right? Like the lack of those things is indicative of a larger lie perpetuated by the marketing and especially the interviews.
I think the interviews are bad. Like, I think the interviews are, I'm 100% with you. I think like there's lots of room where what he could have said was, what we're making is this like kind of a hardcore survival thing that has a lot of atmosphere and a lot of empty space. And like, it's about enjoying that and about traversing it and trying to survive. But they didn't do that. So I'm with you completely there. But there's just like so much, there was so much belief that it was going to be this like, AAA story driven. They never show characters in those trailers. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know how you say this game is not going to have characters besides putting out a trailer that doesn't have characters in it. You know what I mean? Like,
there's a point here as well that I think gets lost in a lot of the discussion of like where we all kind of were when that trailer dropped. That was in the middle of E3, and E3 is bullets.
The
original trailer was a Jeff Keighley Game Awards.
Yeah, thing. It was a very funny experience because that was Keighley plus who was the co-host that year.
Oh, Joel McHale.
Yeah, Joel McHale, who was like no-selling everything, who hated everything, who was like taking pot shots at the whole event. And that trailer drops, and Joel McHale, if you go back and watch like the extended, that moment, Joel McHale's like, oh shit, that looks dope. Like, he just, his entire facade of his, like, his disinterested, like, asshole persona falls apart. And then they bring on Sean Murray to pitch the game. And, like, right away, that is where maybe they could have, Murray could have explained what that game was going to be. Yeah. And I wonder if they even knew at that point what that game was going to be, or if that was a situation that was, and that's on them for not being clearer about it.
Sorry,
for
you're
sure.
totally right. Sorry. I for whatever reason, had it in my brain as an E3 thing, but
still, I only remember it blowing up
much...
at E3 too.
Yeah,
I know it was right away at that VGX Awards, because it was like the VGX Awards that didn't have a live audience, and Twitter exploded at that initial trailer.
But the point still stands that, like, it was surrounded by a bunch of shit that looked like, oh yeah, it's a video game, and this looked like, this is sci-fi book covers. You know what I mean? Like, it just looked so different and so beautiful in so many ways that I think how much it stood out at the time is a massive part of why it caused a splash at all. And then
I think it also revealed that we were in the middle of this kind of love-in around proc gen, around procedural mm-hmm. generation, mm-hmm. where, like, games like Spelunky and Rogue Legacy and Binding of Isaac had opened up this idea of, wow, infinity. Computers can do infinity, exactly, yeah. Which is, like, why when that initial trailer hits, it is the E3 trailer that then says, like, every atom, it isn't. It's this initial one. It's, like, every cloud procedural, every tree procedural, every rock procedural.
Every animal, yeah.
Exactly. And so eventually, I think that, like, part of that comes from not necessarily understanding what that means or what the limits of that are, or, like, what the strengths of that sort of terminology are. What we needed was a game that it's a little bit closer to what they have now, which is one that had some handcrafted shit in there too. It's why I'm so excited for Outer Wilds, which is like, what if No Man's Sky, but a single solar system with, like, handcrafted puzzles and adventure game elements and stuff like that? Because I think a lot of people will respond well to that, because what people want isn't a ship next to some red grass on the ocean. Like, that game exists. That it does. That just wasn't that interesting, which I think is a much harder thing to contend with than it didn't have some features that it never said it had in the trailers. And that Murray danced around, admittedly, throughout the entire press cycle for that game.
What is he doing? I feel like he's still hidden.
They're still there. He's being quiet, I think, yeah. Kind of smartly, and letting letting the game and its updates speak for themselves, which is the right fucking move at this point, you know?
Yeah.
I'm very curious about what they do for No Man's Sky next, which we'll presumably get some details at around E3, you know?
Yeah. Fair. The last one I wanted to mention was Shaq Fu. I don't know if y'all remember Shaq Fu.
I remember the original Shaq Fu?
Yes, the original Shaq Fu.
Was there a trailer problem
was partially the trailer, and it was partially, like,
was this like
just
an
the sort
ad
of
campaign
in general? And this isn't exactly just, you know, the trailer and the marketers made something really amazingly cool. But my God, the hype for that game and then the disappointment, I can't let Shaq Fu go. Okay. It was not great.
I need you to tell me about your hype for Shaq Fu.
I really liked Shaq as a 10-year-old.
He's tall.
He was a tall dude. I liked basketball, and I liked Shaq, and I was 10. And anything that Shaq was in, I was going to attempt to watch. I never saw Kazam, which is Shazam, whatever it's called. I'm sorry.
Wait, which one is the Mandela Effect Shazam. One, and which one's not? Which one's the real
Shazam,
one?
Shazam doesn't exist. Shazam is the one with Sinbad that doesn't exist.
Right.
That's one
that doesn't exist. Shazam will exist in 2019.
Oh my God.
When it comes out starring the guy from... what is that? Damn. It's one of the DC movies. I can't remember who's in it. Fuck.
That's right. Because is that what they're calling it? Because I can't call it Captain Marvel, right?
Yeah. No, yeah, it's Shazam.
Mm-hmm.
Who the fuck? Oh, who's that guy? He was in that NBC show where he's a spy and he's paired with the hot girl.
Could that be?
I'm sorry.
Chuck.
It's an unusual concept for a network show.
Levi.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yes. He's playing Captain Marvel. He's playing Shazam.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
Oh boy.
Great.
That's okay.
I'm just so mad.
I mean, I guess that one of the interesting things about you bring up Shaq Fu is, like, so much of what we've talked about is the modern era of games press and games like the games press cycle of E3 video game trailer. But I think growing up, we absolutely had this with with like magazine ads also. Oh, yeah. Magazine ads, boxes, back of boxes, all sorts of ways in which like the marketers who built the sort of ephemera around a game could try to communicate something to you. I remember looking at that, the Phalanx game box with the old man with the banjo. Do you know
the
what I'm talking
man,
about?
Yes.
I think that was Phalanx.
My God.
And be like, what is this game? And obviously the back of the box is like, oh, it's a shoot 'em up. It's a shmup.
Dude, he's got like a banjo and overalls and oh my God.
But like,
the hyper speed out shootout in space is like the box quote itself.
But like, that's an interesting take. That's like, this game has nothing to do about this old man holding a banjo, but is very much trying to get you to pay attention to it instead of the 30 other games next to it on the shelf that have spaceships, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it worked if you bought Phalanx.
Yeah, I didn't. So maybe it didn't work in retrospect.
Fair. Yeah. Very
so
fair.
It goes.
God. Okay. Well, if there are no others, Robert Patrick, do you have any other specials?
Nope.
No, nothing. They go.
All right. You got it. I'm going to read a cool story. for the question bucket, we had quite a few of those make your own fun ones, and this was a really cute story that I wanted to throw. Also, because it was a Time Splitters 2 related story, which is like, man, Time Splitters 2 was amazing. God, the Time Splitters series. That's something I would enjoy a reboot, but excuse me. Going on too far here. We got I believe this came from, I don't have their name, I will put it in the show notes just in case. Quick response to the call for making your own fun. I'm not sure if this counts since the mode exists in the game to begin with, but I have only the fondest memories spent creating some house rules multiplayer horror with friends in Time Splitters 2. For y'all who haven't played, Time Splitters 2 is one of the few GameCube era shooters to have an intensive level editor for multiplayer, meaning that almost every aspect, maps, lighting, AI, bots, rules, etc., could be created by a user and saved for future use. One of those multiplayer modes was called Virus, a kind of tag where a physical touch or kill spread a virus of sickly green flame to another player. My friends made a house rule banning weapons, meaning the only ways to escape the infected players were to run or hide. Everything changed for us. One of my more architecturally gifted friends started creating twisting labyrinths of dead ends, sheer cliffs, and teleporters that were nearly impossible to navigate from a first-person perspective. Packed with a maximum number of AI, this turned the mode into a ghastly game of hide-and-seek. What followed became some of my fondest and most frightening experiences I've had in my gaming career. At the start of every round, we would try and hide from the AI, one of which would always start with a virus. Each time another bot was infected, you'd hear a scream, meaning that we'd sit huddled in a corner, listening of the cries slowly becoming more numerous and come closer and closer to our hiding spots. One of their eerily glowing AI, when they crossed our line of vision and made a beeline towards us, we would need to flee, trying furiously to keep a mental map of the maze while sprinting away. This took on another dimension when a human got infected, as suddenly your friend or friends could see your screen and would start combing through hiding spots, moving faster and hunting more aggressively than a bot ever could. The only escape was to keep moving and pray. A dead end meant you'd have to juke your pursuer, a teleporter could beam you away, and so on. Flickering lights and an ambient soundtrack meant we'd had many late nights filled with adrenaline and suspense. I don't think I've ever gripped a GameCube controller so tightly. We never touched the deathmatch modes or normal maps again. It was, in a word, amazing. And I'm going to just search my inbox to make sure we get that good friend. This is from Ben, reader Ben, who sent that in. Thank you, Ben, because that was beautiful. My God, that's great. I love hearing about that stuff.
Yeah, me too. I keep thinking about that stuff, even though we did that episode weeks ago now, because I keep like vaguely remembering various times, or something will pop in my mind where I think about like having a friend over to do that exact sort of thing and like figure out a mode that either a set of settings in Perfect Dark or something else that was like, this isn't like, I just remembered thinking about Perfect Dark that I used to try to build a mode based on the Matrix Revolution. What's the second one? Reloaded?
I think it's Reloaded.
With like, yes. Where I had like one of the models in Perfect Dark, one of the AI model, one of the models you could use or that you could give to a sim, was like all white everything with like blonde like maybe not dreadlocked hair, but basically they looked like the twins from The Matrix Reloaded. And I absolutely made a mode that was like those two and then a bunch of like other schmucks that represented the Merovingians people or were agents, and set up different, you know, AI levels and styles and weapons and stuff. And just was like, this is my Matrix game. I made it inside of Perfect Dark. I was very, very into the Matrix as a teen. So, you know.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good. I used to even, I did something like that with Perfect Dark, but it was never at nearly as cool as what you're describing. I just enjoyed playing with the variables and messing around with, you know, ridiculous things. But I just always tested the limits of anything I could do. And like GoldenEye, I would see if I could shoot out every single light and see how get it in the level. And then also what objects I could kind of move around and like manipulate so I could make a giant stack of the computers and things like that. It's very like not surprising with how much I like immersive sims and just digging around basically. But man, that stuff is good. I like it. I like hearing about when people actually made it for a purpose like these, that, like Ben and Ben's friends did. So awesome. I think that's probably about going to do it for us. As always, you can send your questions to gaming@vice.com with the subject question. Shout outs, as always, to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. We're on Twitter at Waypoint. We're on Facebook at Waypoint Vice. And we're on YouTube at Waypoint Vice. And you should go to YouTube and check out the video review for God of War that just went up as we were recording. So it'll be...
Oh, nice.
It'll be up for you all to watch and enjoy. Patrick did an amazing job on that review.
You did it amazing. You edited it, so video. Yeah,
I did nice edit. Work. But Patrick, how's your life now that you're not reviewing God of War? I guess I should ask.
Yeah, fucking reviewing games is bullshit.
True.
It takes a lot out of you. It's a weird thing.
Well, the big thing is that I can't stay up till like 3 a.m. anymore.
Yeah,
right. Like that was right. Like when you just need like if I could had just a couple of nights where I'm just gonna do it. I'm just gonna pull the ripcord, and I'm gonna get through this game. Especially if it's a long game, like, you know, whatever. A game's 12 hours long. Like, I can find a way to do that in a week pretty easily. Yeah. But you know, a 30-hour game, that it's weird. Like, because games like that, when you review them, you want to try and get as close to a normal playthrough as possible. Obviously, like, you're playing it more hours in a day than a lot of like normal people might be, but you also don't want to be like, hey, I'm going to skip all this side stuff because I need to get to the end of the story. So balancing all that is tough, and I'm glad people enjoyed it. I'm really proud of the piece that I wrote, and I think we're trying to do something a little bit different with the you know, I think we, like, when Austin and I talked about the site when we started, was like, fuck reviews, we're not doing that. And then I think the way we've come around on it is like, well, what if, like, reviews are a vehicle for, like, the critical follow-up essay? Mm-hmm. But what if you do that in the review?
Yeah.
And I like what we're... I like what we're doing with them so far. So hopefully people will like them too.
If you missed it, Rob and Patrick, so Patrick did the read in the podcast feed. So if, in case you like are looking at your podcast right now, your app, or you're not looking at it right now, you just hit play and we started playing from today. The previous thing in the feed is the God of War review, in which Patrick does a reading of it. And then afterwards, he and Rob have a really good conversation. So make sure to listen to that.
Definitely. And also, of course, you can read it and read everything we do on waypoint.vice.com. And we really do appreciate it when you read our words as well as listen to our voices. It makes us very happy. Thank you all. Patrick, where can people find you online? I guess we should do that.
I mean, at Patrick Klobuck.
Amazing. Austin, how about you?
At Austin_Walker.
And Rob, how about you?
At Rob Zachney.
Amazing. I'm at Danielle R.I. And I'm very happy it's Friday. And I thank you so much for listening to Waypoint Radio, and I remind you to please be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.